Hi, I'm Tim Peter, and welcome to Search Chat, Solo Segment's podcast dedicated to all things search, AI, and content marketing related. Who is Solo Segment? Well, we're a technology company focused on site search analytics and AI-driven content discovery to improve search results, increase customer satisfaction, and unlock revenue for your company. Solo Segment, make your search smarter. You can learn more at solosegment.com. On today's episode of Search Chat, Solo Segment CEO Steve Zaker and I talk about the power of automation within marketing and how CMOs can use both automation and data to keep their seat at the table as companies evolve. We also talk a bit about digital transformation and what that means for your organization going forward. All that and more on Search Chat, coming at you right about now. Well, hey, Steve.
Good morning, Tim. It's a morning. We're never talking in the morning.
We never talk at this time of day. It's like we're having a chance to have breakfast together, Steve.
It is very much like breakfast. I hope you have a yummy spread in front of you to get your day started.
Exactly. It's like breakfast with Breakfast with Bozo? Breakfast with Bongo? Something like that?
Bongo? I don't know. See, I'm not old enough to know that sort of thing.
Tim. Well, that's true. We are both very young. Very, very true.
Sure.
So that's no kind of segue whatsoever, but we're just going to dive right in.
Yeah.
You were telling me a little while ago about a fascinating conversation you had with a prospect earlier this week.
Yeah.
And you know, some really, really enlightening insights that you picked up during that conversation. And it relates to a lot of the headlines that have been going around this week. So I'd love to hear, you know, this story.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's it really is fascinating when you talk to people and, you know, all conversations with clients, potential clients especially, but also clients where you're expanding your relationship, they always start with context. You know, what is the context of their business? What is the context of their pain? What is the context of their need? And as you have these discussions, they're almost like therapy sessions, right? You know, you're beginning to kind of tease out of them kind of, you know, where are the challenges in their business and what do they need to focus on? And part of this discussion got into a very specific technical area. And, you know, it's one where we have a product offering. It's around taxonomy creation. Mm-hmm. And the technology that we use is very much text analytics, NLP, machine learning led.
We take
kind of a bottoms up approach to taxonomy versus a tops down one. And it was interesting just during that conversation that I mentioned to this person who's, you know, a library science professional, right? Does taxonomy ontology work for a living? And I said, well, yeah, we developed and deployed the taxonomy in 6 weeks, right? And that got a bit of a raised eyebrow. And as we talked through it, I mean, there were clearly that first release of the taxonomy was imperfect, you know, by any stretch of the imagination, right? But, you know, our goal, of course, and the client's goal was, hey, let's get this out into the environment and measure it. And, you know, and so I absolutely accept that as you look at some of the work that we do, some of the work that, you know, our listeners do in their daily lives, very often, you know, what is going out into the market surely can be deemed as imperfect. But I think everything is, right? It's almost like no matter how long you take to perfect your work, you know, it's never going to be done. And, you know, our goal is, you know, being kind of a very analytics, a very data-driven company, is let's get this imperfect thing out into the environment and allow it to give us some data about its imperfections and hopefully its perfections. Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Let the market tell us when we got it right.
Yeah, sure.
Well, and it's interesting when you think about how long it takes to develop taxonomies, you know, using traditional methods.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, with no disrespect to the very fine work that many great taxonomists do in doing that, how frequently those need to be updated, often, you know, 2 days after they're released, just because people keep coming up with new content that doesn't quite fit in the buckets you've put together, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, the goal here is, like with anything, right, get it out there, get it out into the environment, get some feedback from it and make it better as you go. Because I think the penalty for delay and for perfection is far greater than the penalty for moving quickly. Move quickly and I think, you know, get it wrong fast is not my favorite.
Get it wrong quickly, right?
Yeah, it's not my favorite. As a friend of ours wrote. Right. But I do agree that sooner versus later is definitely better. Whether you're looking at something very specific like taxonomy development or very broad like digital transformation, right? You know, getting started often the hardest part. And we let this, you know, this quest for the right answer preventing us from actually getting some feedback from the market as quickly as we can.
Well, you know, that gets to a really interesting point because there was an article in Search Engine Land, and as you might imagine, they spun this article based on search.
Sure.
However, they cited a survey that had been conducted, and I don't have the survey in front of me at the moment, so I'm going to miss who it was for. But basically, they were talking to marketers generally, not just search marketers. Mm-hmm. And 61% said that creating an automation strategy for their marketing activities is a top priority.
All right.
Which is really interesting, given what you're talking about.
Sure.
Because you cannot automate things for which you don't have the data to let the automation run.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're not getting data from the market, if you're not getting feedback from what's actually happening, what users are doing or customers are doing, it's kind of hard to automate that process, right?
I mean, there's a lot of human nature in that that as well, because we are probably at the most data available point in history. And by the way, we're not at a peak, right? We're just on the slope of a rapidly rising line. And, and, you know, so the amount of data that we have available to us, it defies the ability of humans to interact with it. Certainly dashboards are good for understanding what's happened, but I think the most important thing to do is to figure out how to put that data to work so that it makes life better without humans having to actually do the work. Now, I know there's a lot of scary science fiction around that statement, but you know, it is a little frustrating to talk to marketers who are increasingly getting this, right? Making data-driven decisions, et cetera, right? That's becoming part of the DNA. And you say, okay, well, great. Now we're just going to set that data free and it's going to go make the customer experience automatically. And there's a bit of a recoil in that. You know, we have a product Guidebox that's in beta right now.
And, I know where you're going with this.
Yeah,
this is great.
And so this thing is like purely data driven. You know, it's making content recommendations based upon the behavioral data that we see on one of our clients' websites, run it through. There's some analytics that go through that or some algorithmic or rules-based components to that. There's some machine learning components that it will be coming out shortly. But it's all data-driven, right? So these recommendations just appear. And, you know, we were talking to a large tech company a little while ago. And, you know, one of the things that they said was, hey, we like that. That's good. Like those recommendations. They seem spot on. But do you think maybe we could put our own recommendations in there, right? You know, that we could, you know, the product manager or the page owner could put their own stuff in there. And it's like, and I didn't want to say, yes, you could do that if you want to make it worse. But, you know, it's making that leap, right, to trust that the data you're seeing is actually going to be better, you know, than your intuition.
Right.
And I think that's what a lot of people struggle with. We also see that same struggle in kind of cross organizational silos, right? So Guidebox, you can put it on any page of your website and it's going to tell, I guess this is kind of shameless, but it's going to tell ground truth what is the best piece of content that should be on this page, right? That should be recommended. Right. Even if it's another product group within your company. And so now imagine you're the, you know, you're the nuts and bolts product manager, and all of a sudden the stapler product is being recommended on your product page, right? That's got to be pretty disconcerting. But the data tells us that for this person, recommending a stapler versus a nut and a bolt is the right thing to do at this time.
Exactly.
So let the data drive it. And so I get that people embrace that automation strategy, but they also have to kind of think about how do they wrestle with their human intuition as it tries to wrest control from their better demons.
Absolutely. Well, it's interesting because A, I've had that same experience. It tends to be one of the first questions we're asked. I mean, if it's not the very first question, it's in the first two or three we're asked every single time.
Yeah.
And one of my answers to this is you already do that with the links that you put on the page, with the navigation that you have on the site and the like. And when you consider how high bounce rate is for many sites, or many pages, you consider how high exit rate is for many pages, you consider how low conversion rate is for many sessions.
Right.
And clearly what we're doing today isn't always working as well as we'd like it to. That doesn't mean people aren't making great strides to make it better. It doesn't mean they're not making their best efforts.
Yep.
But this is definitely something we're letting the data lead. Produces results that often we can't achieve any other way.
Yes.
And so it is a fascinating thing. You know, it, there's this great piece on marketing charts that this relates to very closely that showed a 6-year high in the time, in the percentage of time analytics is used by CMOs. So this was a survey of CMOs that talked about the percentage of time they use analytics in their decision making.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of points here that I want to get through because it's a handful of data points that are fascinating. So 6-year high, that 6-year high, 43%.
So guessing the rest of the time, intuition.
Intuition the rest of the time.
Yeah.
Now, what's really, really fascinating about this is multi. There's a couple different pieces. One, the use is actually higher in B2C than B2B. About more than half the time, according to the article, B2C CMOs use this, while B2B companies' analytics is used less than 40% of the time. Which that's just staggering in 2019 that this is still a conversation we're having.
Yep.
And based on a 7-point scale, CMOs rated analytics contribution to company performance at an average of 4.1. This is on a scale where 7 is the best.
Well, it got so, past the midpoint. I guess maybe that's something.
Right.
Good Lord.
But maybe if, you know, you're not making use of the analytics, and maybe if you don't rate the analytics as having a significant contribution to company performance, maybe we need to start asking the question of, are you measuring the right things?
Yeah.
Are you, you know, are you using analytics appropriately?
Yes.
You know, and I'd just love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, we talk a lot about that. I mean, so where we started as a company, you know, you rewind a couple of years ago, when we were really focused on site search. And, you know, when you look at any of the statistics, and most of our customers, by the way, are, you know, B2B, large enterprise type of customers, definitely companies more than 500 million or so in revenue is kind of our sweet spot. And when you talk to them about site search, despite the fact that something like 85, 88%, right, of B2B buyers, and whether that's C-level execs or IT managers or marketing managers, whoever, wherever you are, you're doing your research online, right? Nobody's asking for something to be sent to them, even though you get these things in the mail. You still get things in the mail, but nobody, maybe that's a differentiator these days when you send a physical object. I don't know. But you know, 88% of these folks are doing their work digitally. And it was a struggle to say, do you know how good your search engine is? And the answer was universally no. And universally, like, not only do I not know, I can't know it because I don't measure it. And so, you know, the good news is a lot of companies weren't investing a lot of money in search, which was a real problem. So they weren't wasting a lot of money. But the fact that they had no idea about one of these most critical capabilities, they just kind of ignored it. And it was intuition. It was like, well, maybe I got to invest a little bit over there, so I'll put a little bit. But they really had no sense for that. So it's really not a surprise to me that so few of the marketing teams are still relying upon either habit, right? So of where to allocate resources and where to focus attention, or intuition, right? It's that they're kind of feeling their way through this. I think it's part of the DNA of marketing teams, quite frankly, because in reality, I mean, I fully accept that part of the job is art and not science, right?
Of course. Always.
More absolutely. So than if you're the CFO, which is a little more science-based. but
well, they tried that, but Enron found that didn't work
when
you tried to be a CFO on art as opposed to a science.
That's a good point, right? Well. Doesn't work so well. So definitely more science-based. So I accept that it's a different discipline and it has some different rules. But, you know, especially as we try to wrestle with how do we make the most effective use of our digital dollars? If you're not being led by data in digital, it's like you just closed your eyes, right? You're just ignoring it because it's the most measurable interaction you have. And so that's what we try to, you know, as we talk to folks is to talk about this very point. It's like, yeah, you have to kind of put away some of the instincts that if you're doing, you know, brand marketing and, you know, especially our clients, you know, mm-hmm. they're still putting up big signs in airports, right? And they're still still doing trade shows. Those are still really important components of it. But they have to kind of suppress those instincts when they get to digital because digital is data driven. And as we talked about before, the greatest impact of data is in automation. And so where being data driven is most important is not only are your decisions better, but it helps you then make that leap into the automation space.
Well, and this is a great transition point. You know, you were talking to me earlier about this article from MarTech Today mm-hmm. about how CMOs are often not as involved in companies' overall digital transformation as the CIO might be, or as, you know, the head of technology yep. or the, you know, maybe the CDO, if they have one, chief digital officer, if they have one, or the CEO, frankly, yeah. you know. Yeah. And I do think it's interesting that when you talk about, you know, the need to be data driven, the need to be data influenced and data informed, if marketers aren't making use of those tools effectively, is that limiting their seat at the table? You know, I'd love to hear your thoughts about
that. It absolutely is, because when you think about it, I mean, we use fancy words these days. We say the CMO owns the customer experience. But there's a term that we were using back in the mid-90s, which was voice of the customer. And by the way, I just ran into another voice of the customer exec, so maybe it's back.
It's back, for sure.
But this whole notion that you do digital transformation to make your business better, but better is really so you can sell more, right? And so it's better in the eyes of the customer. And what's fascinating is even today, you see again and again in large companies, you know, it's CIO, COO are kind of the two leaders of digital transformation. It's usually one of the mm-hmm. two. Mm-hmm. And you know, the chief digital officer is an interesting role because I think that a lot of companies discovered that maybe they didn't have the right experience, the right point of view, the right DNA to kind of be more digital. And so they went out and hired these CDOs who are generally, you know, younger digital natives who, you know, can help them kind of unlock their culture and move forward. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I get that. But, you know, when you think about the marketing professionals and kind of how they should be at the table, you know, the one thing those new people often miss is that connection, kind of that thread that runs through the business from everything we do, from product and platform to support the product, right through to the customer. They don't have a good sense of that. And that is really mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. the marketing team can shine. And I think that the fact that, you know, as we said about the data before, you know, less than 40% of these B2B execs are using data to kind of drive the decision making. It makes, I think, them seem less credible at the table.
Right.
Because certainly the IT guys can talk in very data-driven terms. The COO can certainly talk in very data-driven teams. And, you know, these digital natives, these CDOs, hey, they're the hip new guy, young guys, so everybody's listening to them, right? but I think that if to the extent that CMOs can come to the table with really solid understandings in very quantitative ways about the customer experience, about what's important, and more importantly, about the gaps that exist between you know, where we are and where we need to be, I think it gives them the credibility to be part of the equation. And I, you know, again, I think the things that you cited in those previous articles really talk about the fact that you know, the language of marketing today still remains largely non-quantitative. That's a real problem in credibility because
right.
the rest of the company, you know, whether it's the CFO, COO, CIO, CEO, these are the quants, right? And they want to see that the people at the table who are having that voice of the customer can do it in ways that are very specific, meaningful, and measurable.
Without question. You know, one of my favorite definitions of digital transformation I've ever heard is it's not really a project, right? We need to not think so much as transformation as it's, you know, it's if you were to start this company from scratch today,
right?
What would the company look like versus, you know, if you're a legacy company that's been around 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, right? Obviously, you approach the market differently. Mm-hmm. You know, Uber doesn't need to do digital transformation. Yeah. Airbnb does not need to do digital transformation. Google doesn't need to do digital transformation. Right. They're companies that grew up in this space. And so they already work in a way that their customers work.
Right.
And I think that's exactly what you're talking about is how do these marketers who understand how the customer work translate that back into the right data and the right story to bring the CEO, the COO, the CIO, the CTO along on that journey to say, yeah, this is the kind of company we need to be to get us to where our customers are and expect us to be.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. And part of the challenge, of course, with the CMO community is this is a long-standing trope in change management, which is, you know, culture eats strategy, right?
And,
that's part of the challenge, and I accept that is what a lot of the CMOs are struggling with. But at the end of the day, you know, you want to be there. You have to be there, and you have to be there in a way that the business is going to understand and, I don't know, respect is probably a pretty good word as well. But, you know, and being data-driven is part of that equation.
Well, it's really interesting because there's one last article I wanted to point to while we're having this discussion and something you have broad experience with. There was a Deloitte piece that explained why CMOs need tech alliances across the C-suite, right? And how you align leadership to impact user experience, which is what you're talking about. But maybe you can tell a story or you know, some history you have with this about why this is so important.
Yeah. Well, I mean, change is team sport. There is nothing, you know, there's nothing that happens in the organization. You know, when I was at IBM, you know, I often was cast in these roles of what I used to talk about as fixing broken toys, right? But I was put into these places where, you know, things were off the rails and, you know, things had to be put back on the track and moved forward. And, you know, the thing that I often tried to do was to, you know, find a friend, right? You know, is to find somebody within the organization who kind of understood where they were in a very pragmatic, fact-based, and, you know, truthful way, because I think there's a lot of denial when things are in poor shape. And I think if anybody thinks about any challenging time in their professional career where they were in a position that that required some significant change, there's a lot of denial around. And, you know, again, if I could talk about probably any meeting I've had in the past couple of weeks, right? Which where, you know, you're faced with a really hard reality. And even when faced with facts that describe that reality, there's a lot of chance for denial. We were talking about with one prospect about a trial we were doing, and there was a lot of denial is probably the best word, but there was a lot of denial in that room about the reality, even though, by the way, everybody had expressed that reality in kind of qualitative terms all during the sales process. But when you're faced with the facts, you start nitpicking at the edges. I remember when I was doing change management work, and this was back in the late 90s, I was working at Prudential, and one of the execs there always said, he said it was kind of common for when the gap is measured in miles, that people argue about the measurement of inches. And his point was always, you know, forget the gap in inches, right? Just we'll measure the inches when the gap gets down to about a foot, but focus on, you know, where are your real true gaps and measure those and be able to measure those. So this kind of all comes back to, you know, are you data driven? It's amazing how much that first point in our discussion kind of brings it all back. But it really is about, you know, how do you make sure that you have the right language within your business to you know, just be credible throughout everything you're doing. And whether it's getting a seat at the table for a big transformation, whether it's, you know, being and making sure that your resources are being allocated to the most important things in your business, or, you know, you're able to respond to email, that nasty email you get from the CEO about a complaint he has about what's going on in your digital space.
Right,
and,
right.
And one of the most powerful and uplifting moments you can have as a marketing professional is when the CEO hits you with his intuitive feeling about something and you can say, hey, I understand what you're saying there, but here's some facts that kind of support our point of view, right?
Right.
And that's always a much easier discussion than to have, no, my opinion is different from your opinion. That's a little bit harder.
Right. Well, and you're undoubtedly familiar with Kaushik's law, right? Avinash Kaushik, who is the evangelist for Google Analytics. And a long-standing writer and thinker on terms of analytics and the like. And he always talks about beware the hippo, where the hippo is the highest paid person's opinion. Mm-hmm. And the point you just made is really critical because it speaks to something I've talked about for years. I always joke about there being Peter's corollary to Kaushik's law, which is it's incredibly important that you beware the hippo, especially if you're the hippo. Right. If you're the leader in the organization, you don't want everything based on your opinion. Yes, your opinion is grounded in experience. Yes, your opinion is grounded in the facts that you have access to and that, you know, your past experience suggests is true.
Yes.
But you really want the people on your team to have good data, to have the facts that either support what you think or make a strong case for why maybe you need to update your thinking. You need to update your priors, as they say, right?
I think we should get a sign made for everybody that says, am I the hippo? And they can put it on their office wall because that is a real danger, right?
Right.
You know, I know that, you know, I was always very careful, especially what's really dangerous, I find, is when as an executive, you're in a room with very junior people who are perhaps presenting their new best idea, or they were selected as the best project of the month. They give you their idea, you know, they come to present whatever. And, you know, you are now five levels removed from these people who are sitting around the table.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
what's really dangerous, and I was always very cognizant of it because I had screwed this up so many times that I finally had to, you know, almost write it on my forehead, is beware of anything you say being interpreted as dogma, because everything you say will be interpreted as dogma. The most offhanded comment that you make, somebody will write it down and then they will go do that, right?
Yes.
Absolutely. And so I was always very careful to preface. Sometimes I would say things, I would say, wait a minute, the thing that I just said, I don't want you to do it. It's just an idea. Right? And if it's a bad one, throw it out, right? But, you know, just to be really, really careful about that, because it is stunning how many ships will sail on the offhanded comment that an executive makes in an unguarded moment. That hippo, you know, notion is, I mean, you always have to be real cognizant of that, especially if you're hiring the organization. And, you know, if you have the power of facts on your behind you, because there were some times when I would say, well, listen, what I got from the sales rep survey might be totally counter to what the CRM tech team was telling me. Mm-hmm, okay, well, now I have some facts. I could say, hey, listen, we were just looking at the CRM survey. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say that. Help me bridge the gap. So that's one kind of thing.
Right.
But the other thing would be like, I don't think that's true. It's like, oh, right. All of a sudden it's not true, but it's just because you didn't think it was true. Yeah, that's a real problem.
Right. Absolutely. Well, Steve, we're coming up on our time for
just
the day.
It flies by, you know, in the morning.
It does just fly by. But we've talked about using data for automation. We've talked about, you know, using analytics and using data to drive your decision making and how CMOs can you know, get a better seat at the table when they speak in data more fully. You know, are there any last thoughts you would have or anything you'd love to, you know, say just to kind of wrap this up?
So I am a passionate advocate for more data. I am a passionate advocate for automating the data. I'm a passionate advocate for having, you know, just kind of a data-driven quantitative sort of life. But what that can lead to is another kind of infamous saying, which is analysis paralysis, right? And, you know, the notion of perfection being the enemy of the good. We have got to get started. So you want your actions to be driven by data, but you don't want, you know, the data to hold you back. You don't want to be a victim of the data. And so that's kind of my final thought. Perfection of the enemy of the good. You know, don't just seek the good because it's often good enough. And if nothing else, you know, perfection is a journey. It's not an end. And so just keep iterating and improving as you go.
That sounds great. As long as you have enough data to make a better decision, use it and move on, right? All right. Well, Steve, thanks so much as ever. Great talking with you.
You as well. Have a great day.
You too. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Take care now.
Search Chat is brought to you by Solo Segment. Solo Segment is a technology company focused on site search analytics and AI-driven content discovery to improve search results, increase customer satisfaction, and unlock revenue for your company. Solo Segment, make your search smarter. And learn more at solosegment.com. If you like what you've heard today, click on the subscribe links you can find at solosegment.com/podcast, on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts can be found. You can also find us on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/company/solosegment. On Facebook at facebook.com/solosegment. On Twitter using the Twitter handle @solosegment. Or you can drop us an email at info@solosegment.com. Again, that's info@solosegment.com. For Search Chat, I'm Tim Peter. I hope you have a great rest of the week. Thanks so much for joining us. And we'll look forward to chatting with you next time here on Search Chat. Until then, take care, everybody.